Welcome to all our listeners out there. This is Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And I'm Phil.
And you are listening to the On the Movie Front podcast. This is episode 7. So what do we got today? It is a beautiful Saturday, kind of springish weather, and we are here sitting in the Sabo Studios where we record. And we got an interesting episode today. This is March 26th. And if you don't know, it's International Tom Hanks Day. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Well, now I know it.
we weren't too sure about what was going on with this day until we saw the Jimmy Kimmel on after the Oscars, and Tom Hanks was the guest, and they were talking about this International Tom Hanks Day. So I'm just like, what is this awesome day? Because Tom Hanks is one of my favorite actors of all time. So today is his day. So we're gonna talk about his movies and his impact in Hollywood. Also, we're going to play movie games like usual and do a couple movie reviews. So, let's get started.
Let's do it.
Anything we have to say before we begin, Phil?
Nope, not at all.
All right, so let's get started. Unfortunately, Mike did not watch another movie this week.
I'm sorry, it's 2 weeks in a row. I apologize.
You made a promise last week.
I promised you guys I would watch something, and I lied.
That's okay, you've been busy with your plays and theaters. And
yes, this is the last weekend of my performance. So I will be able to see mucho movies next week. Mucho
means a lot for all you non-Spanish speakers out there.
I'm expecting at least three.
It's a lot. All right. So that means I'm just going to take over this segment by myself. And what did I watch this past week? I watched this lovely movie called Sucker Punch that just came out this weekend. Directed by Zack Snyder, who also did Watchmen and 300. It's pretty much in that same genre. If you've seen any commercials or the trailers, you just see a bunch of chicks with machine guns, kicking ass, shooting up whatever they are shooting up. And that's pretty basically all the movie is. But, I mean, let me get into a little bit more. We got Emily Browning. She plays the role of a baby doll who's the protagonist of this film. And basically, the beginning, she goes through this. Her stepfather's really cruel to her, pretty much locks her up in a mental asylum, and she makes a couple friends inside. They're supposed to perform a lobotomy to her in 5 days, and so with the patients that she befriends, they plan an escape. Now, that is literally the entire plot. They kind of go through this scavenger hunt quest. It's kind of elementary, but they need, like, for some reason they need certain things to escape. Like, they need fire, they need a map, they need a key. Like, it's kind of silly. But the coolest part about the movie is its visuals, of course. And you see these visuals, it plays out almost like a video game when we're brought into Baby Doll's mind. And it's like a dreamscape that we see within her subconscious, and she along with her friends are fighting off whatever, like Nazi zombies and ogres and robots and just like armies of them, and it plays out like a video game because you never really think that anything bad is going to happen to them. They're kind of just running through, you know, thousands of bullets and just not getting hurt at all, and just being able to take on an entire army, almost like, you know, the Spartans in 300. So, aside from it being completely unrealistic, you don't really go into this movie thinking about how accurate or, you know, how realistic this movie is going to be. It's a lot of fun visuals, a lot of weird cover songs in this movie. It starts the opening scene. You get a weird cover of Sweet Dreams. It's really creepy. Then you get a couple. You got Queen and a Queen cover here and there. It's everything I expected from Zack Snyder. Very stylistic. You have your action sequences that you know goes to slow motion and speeds up here and there. Surprisingly, there was practically no gore at all. To keep its PG-13 rating. And you know, it's a bunch of hot chicks just running around in skimpy outfits and trying to save the day, trying to escape. It's pretty much all I got out of it. If you don't like those type of movies, I really don't think this movie is for too many chicks, and I don't think this movie will be reviewed well or liked by anyone over the age of 32, because this is for a teenager crowd, a youth adult crowd, a fanboy crowd, and a video gamers crowd. So if you're not, if you're outside of that demographic, you're probably not going to like this film. I am in that demographic, so I enjoyed it, though I understand it wasn't a good movie per se. I did enjoy the movie. It felt a little long. I think it was almost 2 hours long. Could have been a simple 90-minute film, and there was too much melodrama during the realistic half of the film. But aside from that, you know what? Whatever. It is what it is, and I enjoyed it.
Two questions. One, was there any nudity?
Nope, PG-13, there is no nudity.
Super disappointing. My second question. During the realistic parts of the movie, and this might be, I guess, spoiling something, so if you don't want to listen in, fast forward. Okay. During the realistic part of the movie, did they show, like, you know, like, if in the, you know, the fiction part, they're, like, battling these demons and they get the fire, did they show the reality part of that where they steal matches or something like that in the asylum?
In a way they do. Not exactly. They kind of they go into the whole plan. They're like, you know, this is what we're going to do. And then pretty much every single dream sequence is when Baby Doll is doing her sexy dance that pretty much like just captivates everyone that's watching. And they use that as a distraction to steal the map and to get the fire and things like that. So you kind of like, yeah, you're brought into the dream sequences and see them, you find out the army, and then obtaining these things, and then you gotta kind of just like flashback to reality. She's done with her dance, and then they have the object.
Okay.
So you don't really see it. And then, I mean, I don't want to spoil the movie too much for people who haven't seen it yet, including Sheehan.
I want you to spoil it for me, though.
Oh.
But, okay, you don't have to.
Okay. Are you gonna see it?
Probably,
I think Phil wants to
see it.
I'll
probably see it.
Okay, so I don't want to really, spoil too much of the movie. But yeah, you know, that's pretty much how that happens.
Okay, so you liked it though.
I liked it. Yeah, like I said, it was
not for everybody, but
it was what I expected, and I didn't think it was gonna be a great movie, but it was a fun movie. And, you know, I'm happy they didn't throw this in 3D because it would have just been completely useless if it was a 3D movie. And it was just
Do you think it was any better directed than the other two movies, or
better directed? I've always had a problem with Snyder, and I think he co-wrote this one as well, so it wasn't like an adaptation from, you know, like 300 or Watchmen. Those were adaptations.
This was kind of an original story.
So he has a problem with storytelling, or at least displaying it or portraying it in a film. Visuals, you know, he has no problems with visuals, but just, you know, could have cut out a lot, and it just, after like maybe the middle, it just felt like it dragged until the ending. And it was okay. I liked Watchmen probably the most out of the three films that I mentioned by Snyder. This would probably be, you know, up to par with 300. It's pretty much the chick version of 300, so.
Okay.
Cool. That's good?
That's good.
Alright, so moving on, let's talk about this International Tom Hanks Day. Now, after our research before the episode, we looked up that this International Tom Hanks Day, it's a, it started out as a fundraiser in Chicago by Lifeline Energy. I think this is the seventh year into it, and this is where they raise money, and they show Tom Hanks films, and a whole bunch of people get together and donate to the cause, and I think Tom Hanks matches the money, how much they make for, and it's one of his favorite charities as well. So it's all in fun, and it's a good cause, and I just really love it because it's Tom Hanks Day. And don't get me wrong, I will spend every day of my life thinking it's Tom Hanks Day just watching Tom Hanks movies. So to
highlight Tom Hanks, we're going to go over his filmography. If you're not familiar with like what a filmography is, you can go on to IMDb, which is a very popular movie website, imdb.com, and you can look up, you know, all the movies an actor has acted in. So we're going to go down Tom Hanks' list and just kind of comment on the ones we've seen, the ones we haven't seen, the ones we love, and we're gonna make today our, you know,
this is a tribute to Tom Hanks.
Celebrate
this
him.
Segment is our Tom Hanks tribute for International Tom Hanks Day. So we'll start from the beginning. I haven't seen many of these movies that he first started in. He Knows You're Alone, and Mazes and Monsters. I haven't seen these two in the 80s.
Never even heard of them.
Right. Oh, well, this one was a made-for-television, it said.
Okay.
So, but this 1984 was Splash.
Yes.
And that we've both seen.
Right.
Have you seen that one?
No.
That was a fun movie. It was,
Him and Daryl Hannah.
Right, right,
are,
right.
Daryl Hannah plays a mermaid, who, Tom Hanks falls in love with when meeting her, when she's outside of water. And, she moves into his apartment. And it's just a really interesting story.
It goes with the drama. If you ever do fall in love with a mermaid, you know, pretty much this is a very realistic portrayal of what would happen if you ever did meet a mermaid that you fall in love with and she has to return to her home,
yeah,
which is the water. And you pretty much don't have much to do with that. So
yeah.
It was a fun movie.
It was a very light
romantic comedy in the 80s, and it had that little spin to it. It was cool. I liked it.
And
it
had nudity.
Wow, you're all about the nudity today. What do we got next? Bachelor Party? I have not seen that, actually.
No?
No.
Oh, I saw it. It's a classic. You know, Tom Hanks has a... you know, he's going to get married, so he decides to throw a massive bachelor party. I don't remember much about the movie besides the actual party itself. There's a horse walking around. And this movie was classic because it kind of led way to a lot of the raunchy comedies.
Like The Hangover.
Right, right. It's kind of, like, lended itself to that stuff a little bit. You know, it was mainstream, and it was fun. It was just a fun movie to watch. Like I said, I don't remember too much else about it, though.
Good. All right, and then next we have the Man with One Red Shoe. Have not seen that.
I'm not sure if that's the one I'm thinking of, so I'm going to say I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
We're looking it up real quick, and obviously it's a comedy.
It's a remake as well.
No, I have not seen this movie. It's about a director of the CIA.
I'm really interested what this One Red Shoe has to do with the movie now.
Hmm.
I might have to watch it.
Okay.
Okay, going a little bit down the line, what do we got here?
Volunteers?
Yeah, never
heard of it.
The Money Pit, I've heard of.
The Money Pit, yeah, that's the movie where him and his wife, they buy a house that looks like it's in amazing condition. They got a great deal on it, and little by little things start, you know, falling apart. I remember one scene where his wife in the movie, who's played by Shirley Long, gets in the bathtub, and then the bathtub falls through the floor. And just funny things like that. And I don't remember much storyline except for the house falling apart, which was the majority of the movie. And then just getting frustrated about it. It was an enjoyable movie and another Tom Hanks classic.
Classic? Oh, man, I'm just realizing I haven't seen too many of these early, mid-80s Tom Hanks films, so I'm going to have to get up on this Tom Hanks thing. So what else? Nothing in Common, Every Time We Say Goodbye. Have you seen those?
No, I've never heard of either of those.
I mean, Dragnet is known for. But
I've never seen Dragnet.
Me neither, but I've heard of it. It's a big name out there. But then we can discuss Big in 1988. That was probably...
instant classic.
First, maybe like one of my first Tom Hanks films that I've watched. And it was so much fun.
I think everybody always remembers the classic scene where him and the old man are dancing on the piano.
Right, right. His boss at the time. That's actually when how he got into the toy industry.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Big is just the concept is so cool. You know, there's this young kid. I wish I was bigger. I wish I was older. And then next day he wakes up and he's Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
He's like a 20-something-year-old and it's just hilarious. He freaks out. He runs away. And
such a great movie.
He ends up getting a job. Like it's hilarious. I love it. And then he falls in love with the chick. Oh, man, I want to watch the movie right now. Hey, what else we got? Turner and...
Punchline?
Oh, yeah, Punchline. I don't know.
I've never heard of
Turner
it.
Turner and Hooch, though.
Turner and Hooch, another classic.
Anything with dogs.
Yeah.
Awesome.
If you haven't seen the movie, it's Tom Hanks and a dog. I'm not sure which one is which. I think Hooch is the dog, but I can never remember.
That's funny you said that.
And, yeah, it's just... they investigate some sort of murder, and somehow the dog solves it. It's a great movie. Great movie. It's a comedy, but it had heart in the middle of it. The next is The Burbs. Have you seen this movie, Rob?
Mm-mm.
I'm pretty sure I've seen this movie. It's about Tom Hanks moves into a community called The Burbs, and it's all about the people that live in the houses around him, and he suspects that something's going on in the area.
That movie poster looks hilarious.
It's just Tom Hanks in the middle of a street with a garden hose.
And a spatula.
And a spatula. I remember liking that movie and also thinking it was creepy. I think that he thought somebody was killing somebody, killing people, and I think burying them in their dead yard, in the backyard.
It looks like it, man. That's crazy.
It's an interesting movie.
What else we got here?
So next is the Joe versus the Volcano. I've seen this movie. It's an, I liked it a lot, actually. Him and a girl, of course. They go on vacation, and basically the volcano starts erupting, and it's all about them trying to escape. And I remember in the end of the movie, they float off on their suitcases that she wanted to buy, and he was like, you know, that's, you're spending way too much money on them. And it's, like, very funny.
I was going to go back. Did you know that he was nominated for Best Actor for Big?
No, I didn't know
that's
that.
That's crazy. That's nice.
Interesting.
I did not know that. Unless
and for Joe versus the Volcano, Meg Ryan was the actress in it also.
Oh, Meg Ryan.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Is that the start of all the Meg Ryan love?
Yeah.
Next we have the Bonfire
of the Vanities.
I've never heard of that movie.
I haven't heard it until he mentioned it on that Jimmy Kimmel skit.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. And then this is one of my favorite Tom Hanks movies, A League of Their Own. I'm going to just say, you know, I'm going to admit it. I cannot make it through that movie without crying. That movie is super sad.
I mean, it's interesting because he has sort of a supporting role, right? You would say.
No, I mean, his role's pretty big in the movie.
It's big, but it's not like the main.
No, the sisters are the main roles, but
right.
He's like the next main role.
Yeah, he's awesome, though. He's Jimmy Dugan. This movie was made in 1992. It has to do with the women's baseball league.
Yeah.
During the war, so
it's really a fascinating storyline. I think that's what makes this movie so cool. It's just like what when the men went to war. You know, who picked up to entertain the people that weren't at war. You know, it was this league of female baseball players, and it's just such an interesting story, such a interesting time in our country, and you know, stuff we didn't really know too much about. I mean, I didn't know about that. You know, we studied the war in school, not what happened in our country while the war was going on. So it's just, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it was, like, super, super sad.
and we're also presented with how long Tom Hanks can actually piss during a scene.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure, because he is Tom Hanks, that actually was real. He really did piss for probably a minute and 10 seconds. I think that was real.
I don't know why you'd say that, but okay.
Because he's Tom Hanks, no one else can do that, okay?
Clearly.
Alright, what else? Radio Flyer? Uncredited, so that's not one of his big ones, but Sleepless in Seattle, one of the classic romantic comedies.
Yes.
And that's it's a nice storyline. They're Meg Ryan, and I forget what happened.
Well, Tom Hanks' wife passed away, and the kid feels like he's been lonely for a little
bit. Right, so the kid wants him to meet someone.
Yeah, so then
they're supposed to meet, right?
Yeah, he gave the radio show a call and told them all about, like, the situation, and Ryan was listening on to it. And, yeah, eventually, long story short, she was supposed to meet up with him without him really knowing it until later on he listened to the talk show, and...
Oh, that's right.
He picked up the phone and started talking to them and explaining his side of the story also. And with that, Meg Ryan fell in love with him even more. And they were supposed to meet up at the Empire State Building.
Yeah, they don't meet until the end of the movie.
What a superb movie! Great movie!
I want to watch that again.
We might be watching some Tom Hanks movies after this, because I'm really pumped for these movies now. But yeah, that was classic romantic film with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. They go at it again later on. I guess we'll hit that up soon. But next we have 1993, Philadelphia, which is Tom Hanks' first Academy Award for Best Actor. Him and, who else is in that movie?
I forget. Denzel Washington.
Denzel, right? Yeah, this is the one where Tom Hanks' character is gay and he has AIDS. And Denzel is the lawyer now, and he fights for...
I've never seen this movie.
I'm like talking to you and looking at you like you know. Yeah,
I've always wanted to. I never had the opportunity.
Oh, if you want to cry during a film,
I know.
That's
probably why I haven't seen it.
Very sad and very touching. And Tom Hanks gives an outstanding performance. This is actually... I don't know, from his earlier stuff, this might be his first movie. He breaks out of his kind of, you know, fun, light character and does something dramatic and serious, and maybe that's what really made him win the award for Best Actor that year. It was a great movie. Very sad. I can't watch it too many times. I might have watched it twice in my life. I probably won't watch it for another 10 years. It's too sad.
Yeah, I gotta watch it, though. I gotta see it.
And of course, next year, 1994, is the epic year of Forrest Gump.
Oh, man. We don't have enough time in this show, or any show, to truly give this movie the credit it's due and deserves. He also won the Academy Award for Best Actor.
Right, that's back to back. Not too many. I can't even think of that many. Or is there another actor that did that back to back? That's crazy.
Oh, I'll have to look that up.
I know Russell Crowe should have done it for Gladiator and Beautiful Mind, but he didn't get it the second time around. But yes, Forrest Gump. You know, we love this movie so much. We actually threw a Forrest Gump party at the apartment. That's how crazy we are about this movie. We just had this movie on loop. We all dressed up as different versions of Forrest Gump. I was ping pong player champion Forrest Gump. Phil, did you dress up for that?
Yes, I did. I can't remember what I dressed up as.
We had
shrimp all night long, chocolate.
Oh yeah, we had different shrimp dishes and chocolate and vanilla ice cream when he was in the hospital.
Yeah.
And someone tried to come in as Lieutenant Dan, but he didn't make it.
Yeah.
Very fun movie, very moving. It's an emotional roller coaster. Recommended to anyone who hasn't seen it yet.
And Forrest Gump. See, I was calling Tom Hanks Forrest Gump because he was that convincing in the movie. He's just, oh man, his performance in that film is just unbelievable.
Without a doubt, if you think Tom Hanks, I think the first character you think of is Forrest Gump. I don't think any actor could have played that character the way Tom Hanks did.
No,
and
not at all.
That's what made this movie come to life and what made it so successful.
Yeah.
But what do you think about the whole talk about them coming up with a sequel?
A sequel?
Yeah.
Well, that's right, because it was an adaptation, and there is a sequel to the book Forrest Gump called, Gump and Company. Yeah.
What is that about?
I don't know, I haven't read the book. It just pretty much goes through the tales, I guess, of Forrest Gump after, where Forrest Gump, the book ends.
I don't want to...
The biggest difference, like, hopefully this won't be a too big of a spoiler. Well, it is. But in the book, the difference between the ending of the book and the movie itself, like, in the movie, obviously, Jenny dies, but in the book, she doesn't.
Whoa.
That is true. So, yeah, no, I mean, I really hope they don't make this sequel, because that could tarnish the awesome name of Forrest Gump, but at the same time, whatever, we can't stop them.
Right,
so whatever happens, happens, right?
Yeah, okay.
Let's move on. 1995, Apollo 13. Oh man, he was just on a roll in these years. Apollo 13 in 1995. A great movie. I love that movie. It gives me chills at the end.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm surprised that he didn't get nominated for that.
He could have. I'm surprised he hasn't either. Yeah. But that was a great movie. And also, 1995 was when Toy Story came out, and he voiced Woody.
Should have been nominated for that too. Nominate Tom Hanks for everything. I stood up to say
that. That was scary. I don't know why you stood up. Moving on, 1996, That Thing You Do. That was a fun movie. That was just fun with the band with that one-hit wonders. They're actually called the Wonders. I like them how they mispronounce the name, the Oneiders, in the band. And he plays a record studio executive and signs them. It's a good movie, lots of fun music, and I liked it.
Yeah, it was good.
What's that? Oh, Saving Private Ryan. Forget about it. He was nominated for that as well.
Man, he's almost nominated for everything.
Man, the 90s was just Tom Hanks' ownage city right here. But Saving Private Ryan, the great war movie, might have had the most epic opening to any war movie of all time.
So realistic.
It's so realistic, so ridiculous. I think it was like 40 minutes long of that one battle. Oh, too much. I'm thinking about it right now.
Yeah,
also, a very sad movie.
Very sad. Yeah.
Moving on.
You've Got Mail.
Same year as Saving Private Ryan was You've Got Mail.
I didn't know they were in the same year. Isn't that weird?
That is really weird.
Wow.
This
talk about a difference in character.
This is another Meg Ryan, Tom Hanks special. And basically, I want to say it's like Sleepless in Seattle. It's just there's an email aspect to this.
Yeah, it's more
modern.
Yeah.
Keeping up with technology. When emails actually, were... You know, I mean, I don't email anymore, do you?
Yeah, it's awesome. We email a lot.
Well, she didn't throw emails. Moving on, 1999, he had Toy Story 2, where she voiced Woody again, and then The Green Mile.
That was a really good movie.
A great movie.
I really enjoyed that movie. And I mean, Tom Hanks' role in that movie, I mean, he played a really good character, but it wasn't...
It was scaled back.
Yeah.
It wasn't his movie.
No, it wasn't his movie.
It was just a great, like, overall
movie.
Which
is interesting that he took that role, but still awesome, because it was a great movie, based on a Stephen King novel.
Definitely. Next, Castaway. Now, this was a Tom Hanks Holmes movie.
Oh, yeah.
This is... He is on the screen almost every single minute of this film. He owns
this
film.
In this movie, I'm just looking at all the things it was nominated for.
He
like
was nominated.
Screen Actors Guild, Critics Society Award for Best Actor. I mean, he won Best Actor in, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, he was nominated a lot. He won the Golden Globe for it. He did not win the Academy for it, but again, he was nominated, rightfully so.
Yeah.
And it's tough. You know, it's you and a volleyball, and you have to act your ass off, and that's what Tom Hanks did, you know?
Do we know who won the Academy Award that year? Phil's going to look that up.
Phil will be looked down, but I'm just saying that I was heartbroken when Wilson was lost at sea.
Yeah.
And he was just yelling, and
Wilson!
it was tough to watch that, man. And, that's a good film. Good film.
Yeah.
I hated the ending, though. Well, I liked the ending, but I was just like, argh! I was going nuts at it. Phil, any word?
The ending, the thing that I liked about the ending of that movie is it's very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, what would you do if the person you loved was lost for...
Oh, that was the 2000, that was the year that Russell Crowe for Gladiator was nominated
and
won. So, yeah.
It's understandable.
But I think we can say Tom Hanks would have won if it was not
for Russell Crowe.
Right, right.
Who else was nominated?
We had Ed Harris for Pollock and Jeffrey Rush, Quills, and Javier Bardem before Nightfall. So, you know.
Really? Javier Bardem? I didn't know he was nominated. I didn't know who he was before.
No Country, right?
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Road to Perdition, 2002. Awesome movie.
Yes. I really like that movie. It's one of my...
It's a Sam Mendes film.
Yes.
And
we all know how awesome of a director he is.
This was I think one of the more underrated films, Tom Hanks. I don't think it gets its recognition as it deserves.
Yeah, I don't know if it was bad marketing for the film when it came out or something like that. It's just something that not a lot of people saw to begin with. And you didn't hear a lot about this movie. I never really heard any bad critics reviews or people talking bad about it. Just people just didn't see it for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because of the year it was placed in, you know, the storyline, but it was a really good movie.
Really good movie. And apparently the same year, Catch Me If You Can came out.
That was an awesome movie.
That's a fun movie.
Leo and Hanks.
And, I mean, that was more Leo's movie, but Tom Hanks, you know, plays the agent that's trying to capture Leo's character for doing all the shenanigans and frauding and everything. So they play a little cat and mouse game throughout the film, and it's fun to watch that play out.
It is a lot of fun.
Especially the final scenes when they, you know, play off each other. 2004, it's kind of like he was making movies every other year now. 2002, 2004. He was just in a bunch of movies. The Terminal.
That was a really enjoyable
movie. That's another underrated film, in my opinion.
I really like that movie.
It was so fun.
That movie,
it's just Tom Hanks stuck in the Terminal.
Yeah.
Awesome. It's such a cool movie.
And his character was hilarious.
Yeah.
Victor and Dvorsky. He was just so much fun.
I'm from Kokosha.
It was just so much fun watching that. We also had The Lady Killers that year. That was a weird movie.
I think I turned that movie off. I saw the whole thing.
It was strange. I can't really say that I liked it, but whatever. We have Elvis has
a
left
cameo,
the building.
So
cameo, so.
Really in the movie.
And The Polar Express, which he...
I still haven't seen.
Did something... What did he do during the Polar Express?
Well,
did he voice all of them?
It's Tom Hanks in animated version, right?
Yeah.
All of their faces are Tom Hanks.
Oh, I have to watch this again. I don't remember that at all.
He plays Santa Claus.
And that's they took the children's book, right, and they made it into a feature film with the crazy lifelike CGI or whatever. 2006, he did a Da Vinci Code, Professor Robert Langdon.
Yeah, it's kind of lame.
It put him in a different. I've never really seen Tom Hanks in like an action thriller before, so this was kind of his action thriller you know, first film, and per se, you know, while we all read the novel, I didn't really picture Tom Hanks playing Robert Langdon.
No, I think he
did the best he could in it, you know.
I think it was just bad casting overall, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not that Tom Hanks could be cast badly, but it just the movie didn't work. Partially because I don't think he fit the character so much. He did a great job doing it, but even everybody else in the film, I just did not like that movie.
Everyone just harped too much on his hair throughout the movie.
Really?
His weird haircut during the Da Vinci Code.
I don't remember that, but okay.
All right, and he voiced Cars. Oh, no. Woody Carr. Does that have anything to do with Toy Story?
I have no idea.
I don't even remember Cars.
I don't remember vaguely. He was also a voice in the Simpsons movie.
He played himself.
Oh, yes.
And then,
Charlie Wilson's War.
It was, that movie kind of bombed.
It was alright, I guess.
Julia Roberts.
Ass, but.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Julia Roberts. You know, I wasn't too impressed by the movie.
It's very forgettable.
What else we got? 2008, The Great Buck Howard. Don't remember that one.
I definitely haven't seen it.
He produced Mamma Mia. 2009, he did Angels and Demons, which was the prequel to Da Vinci Code, which I thought was better than the Da Vinci Code. I think it worked. It played out a little bit better.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor was a good villain in that movie.
Definitely. He produced Where the Wild Things Are. And 2010, he voiced Woody in Toy Story 3.
Classic.
And coming up, he is the director, writer, producer of Larry Crown.
So real quick, what's the last best movie he's made?
In my opinion, it would have to be Terminal, no?
Terminal, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
the last movie, and that was 2004. I mean, since then, he's been in some stuff, but nothing really that good.
It just seems that he's been, you know, kind of scaling back his acting a lot.
More instead of producing.
Right. Getting into that game more. And I guess he doesn't have to act unless...
No.
Maybe the role's
such a likable person
you want
to see, you know. So I'm kind of on the fence about this movie that he's going to be in with Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be that good, honestly.
I don't know. I mean, Julia Roberts is another one that hasn't really made a good movie in a long time as well.
And it's like, you don't want to be in a movie with someone else who's kind of over the acting hill.
Yeah.
You know?
You never know. I think Tom Hanks might have a movie or two left in him that'll get him another Oscar, maybe. That'd be great if he can get the third Oscar. So?
I mean, if Clint Eastwood can do it, he can do it.
Damn straight, Phil.
That does it for our filmography. Mr. Tom Hanks. The myth.
The legend.
The legend.
All right, so we're going to go to play some movie games now. We got the Plotless.
How could you be so plotless?
Exactly, where Phil is going to ditch up some... Well, he researched some movie titles, and Sheena and I are going to try to guess the plot of the film just by its movie title and genre. So, Phil, hit me with your best shot.
All right, this is a drama, and the title is The New 20.
The New 20.
You want to take that one?
You kind of seem like you want to take this
one.
Okay. The New 20, and it's a drama. Well, I'm going to say this has to do with a female protagonist, and she is turning 20. I'm going to assume that's why it's the New 20.
I got to interject. I think it would be 40, because the 40 would be the New 20. You get it?
That just blew my mind. I'm really confused. I'm going to change my plot completely now and say it is a man protagonist. And he goes to this club called the New 20. and at this club is where him and his boys, they hang out, you know, they have some drinks, they try to hit on some women, nothing's really working out at them. And then finally, he gets offered to own the New 20, because they always see him there. He's like VIP status. And then they're going to sell the club, and he wants to keep it going. So... Oh, maybe the club was called 20, and then when he owns it, he calls it the New 20. That's all I have for this movie. I know I'm wrong. Just tell me what it's about.
Well, I just want to say, I think you quoted an episode of Parks and Recreation. Because that's what happens to Aziz Ansari's character. the club he loves is going under, and they
maybe
offer a stake in it, and he buys it. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Phil.
Unfortunately, IMDb doesn't give, like, that much information.
Oh, my God, Phil.
But it basically just says, five best friends in their late 20s discover new truths about themselves, and then friendships they thought would last forever. I would say you're right.
You're right.
Next.
The next one is The Nail, the story of Joey Nardone.
The Nail, the story of Joey Nardone.
Genre.
Drama.
I'm gonna think this is about a gangster, a mafioso, if you will, and I will. The Nail, Joey Sardono?
Nardone.
And how he, you know, he had his life growing up, and then he went to jail for a few years and decided to tell his true story. So this is like when he gets out of jail, him going back into that neighborhood and trying to find people that he once knew and trying to, you know, ask them to collaborate with him on his new book that he's going to write about the whole story and how he's gone clean and nobody believes him. They keep offering for him to do, like, you know, one more job, one new job to get in. And so he takes a job to get the money to start his new book, and then he gets pinched and has to go back to jail.
You were really close with, like, with the whole, like, jail part of it, but he's not a mobster. He's actually heavyweight boxer.
Damn, I was gonna, I swear, I had, like, boxer or mafioso in my head, and I just went with mafioso. Go ahead.
And he actually spent 8 years in prison for, an unfortunate accident. His time in prison and the opportunity reflect has changed him. he finds comfort in the familiarity of his old friend, but his buddies notice a change in him.
Wow, I was pretty close.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, you were there.
That was pretty good.
Wow.
Nice.
I think that's
an accomplishment.
This is Mandy and the Secret Tunnel. This is adventure, drama, and family.
Oh, Mandy and the Secret Tunnel. This is awesome. This is going to be an incredible film. This is a family film. And this is about a little girl named Mandy. She has red head and wears a blue shirt all the time. She likes to explore the park that her family brings her to every Sunday afternoon. And, you know, one day she likes to explore by herself. She chases butterflies, you know, follows squirrels like every little girl does. I think that's what they do. And one day she stumbles upon this tunnel that is kind of in the outskirts of this park. She's one of those curious girls, and of course she has to go into the tunnel to see what's going on in this thing. She's never really seen a tunnel before because she's only 6 years old and she doesn't get out often. Then, when she goes into this tunnel, her imagination takes over and the tunnel becomes like a cave from the Appalachian Mountains, and she meets new weird creature friends and they talk to her because it's an animation film, I think. And then, finally, she gets to a point where she's having so much fun, she doesn't want to leave the cave. But in her adventure, she kind of starts to get homesick eventually, and she tries to find a way out of the tunnel, but she can't. So now she's trying to depend on all of her friends that she made in the tunnel to get out, but they all turn on her, so she's alone. And then, the end, she never makes it out. That's probably like the worst family film ever if I said that. What?
Kind of sounds like Caroline.
Oh, man. I'm just quoting different things right now.
But, it's actually based on a book series that was created by author Lois Gladys Leppard. It is about it's set in 1899, and Mandy's life changes when her Cherokee friends help her escape up to a mansion that holds the hidden secrets of her past and the key to her future.
Crazy.
So there's no tunnel.
No.
Alright, last one.
But not the least one.
Is The Eccentricities of a Blonde-Haired Girl.
Genre?
Drama, romance.
The
Ooh.
Eccentricities of a Blonde-Haired Girl. I'm thinking this is about a young blonde-haired girl. who, you know, is trying to find a mate, and you know, through dating all these people, she realize, you know, her brother realizes that she's really eccentric.
The end.
And it's just accepting and finding out those things and knowing them and then telling them to other people so they can look past them and get to her heart happily
Ever After.
All right, you were close.
Yes.
Well, I mean, IMDb, this is a foreign film.
Oh,
so
man.
IMDb didn't really give too much details, and when I was searching Wikipedia, everything was foreign. It basically says, a young man falls helplessly in love with a mysterious blonde woman that turns his life upside down.
Aw. I think I was really far off.
I think you were close.
Yeah, you were close.
I want to say it ends happily ever after, so that you give you points for that one.
Alright, well that's the end of Plotless.
Plotless! And let's move on to the next movie game, movie review game. Last time, if you listened, Phil and Shin, they went 5 for 5. I was very impressed. So now I'm going to throw some movie review excerpts out to them, and they're trying to guess the movie just based on the movie review that I'm going to read to them. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
You guys going to bat 1,000 again?
Can they do it again? Can they go 5 for 5, 2 weeks in a row?
Alright, here we go. Don't read this, Mike.
Okay.
But, alright, this movie, 2009, I think it helps if I give you the year, because
okay.
It could just be crazy if I don't. So, this movie was 2009, and let me give you this review by Jeff Berkshire of the Chicago Tribune. He says, there's no doubt genre fans will eagerly surrender to the crafty, low-budget charms of this movie. But can the movie cross over from a sure-to-be-devoted cult following to the mainstream? It definitely has the goods, an interesting concept, clever filmmaking, and ambitions that far exceed the Hollywood norm. The protagonist carries the movie with a terrific performance as the alternately funny, sleazy, tragic, heroic lead, but the aliens steal the show.
Aliens, huh?
2009? Would this be,
Cloverfield was earlier than 2009, right?
Correct,
yeah.
Okay, you have any clue, Phil? This must be the easy one.
Well, I don't have easy, medium, hard for that. I just have four.
District 9?
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, that'll be my answer.
Yeah.
It is District 9.
Got
look
it.
At these two. Look at these two.
Yeah.
You guys are silliness. Next, another 2009 film.
Dun dun dun.
By Rene Rodriguez of the Miami Herald. He wrote, at least the special effects work in this movie is remarkable. You never tire of the endless variations of robots and his computer-generated effects crew come up with. And there are only a couple of shots in this film which those effects don't meld seamlessly with the flesh and blood actors. Do you know it yet?
I think I do. But go ahead.
In its climactic half hour, the picture degenerates into an endless procession of explosions.
Is it the Terminator?
No.
Oh.
Phil.
Am I eliminated now? Can I keep guessing?
Yeah, well, let me just, there's one more part I wanted to read.
Right.
More substance would have been nice, sure, but in the thick of the summer movie season, sometimes slick, vapid thrills are all you need. Well, with that, and some air conditioning in your movie theater. So it was a Hollywood mainstream huge movie of 2009.
With robots.
Transformers?
Was 2009?
Yeah.
Wasn't that 2010?
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Well, I'll stop you there. It was Transformers.
Oh,
alright. Awesome.
Good
yeah,
work.
Yeah, I like. Okay, trust me, we're off.
Phil's like, no. 2010. Alright, we got two more. This one is in 2010. This review was written by Richard Probst of the Independent Critic. Much as How to Train Your Dragon was a pleasant surprise earlier this year, this movie will likely catch you off guard with its inventiveness, warmth, and appealing realized characters. While it's not likely to threaten Pixar's Oscar reign this year, it's a sure sign that Pixar is no longer the only animation house in town that has managed to figure out that children are as capable as their adult counterparts of appreciating a really well-made film.
Tangled.
Incorrect.
This is, this year?
Last year, 2010.
Princess and the Frog.
Well, that was 2009.
And Caroline was 2009, right?
Yeah, or earlier.
Or earlier,
than that.
Yeah.
Another enemy victim.
See, it's funny because I think
Despicable Me.
Yeah.
Oh,
I was gonna say, I think that was like the more forgotten animated film when you compare Toy Story and How to Train Your Dragon year. Though I haven't seen it, but I want to see it. And even Tangled, you know, I think it kind of like falls underneath them. Here we go, you guys. All right, I'll give your second guesses. Props, good job. This is the last one. 2010. This is a review by Peter Travers of the Rolling Stone. Director Sean Levy, I don't know how to pronounce that, tosses in a museum of cliches, from gun battles to car chases. There's even an embarrassing strip club sequence in which both stars get to bump and grind. And I haven't even mentioned the star cameos, Kristen Wiig and Mark Ruffalo, James Franco and Mila Kunis, and Comet and Jimmy Simpson. Best of all is Mark Wahlberg, in a nifty but self-satire as a shirtless weapons expert. If you're still thinking all the stars shine sounds like padding, you'll be right. I just picked this one because I wanted to see if you guys could get it with all the cameos and not, like, really any any plot to it.
I don't know a movie that...
this is last year, right? I believe it was a summertime film.
I don't know. Without a plot, I don't know what the movie could possibly be.
Like, all these cameos.
All these cameos, and there were gun battles and car chases.
I mean, I feel like it would be a comedy, but...
Are you guys conceding this one?
No, not yet.
You guys got 20 seconds.
What are the other guest stars?
Kristen Wiig and Mark Ruffalo, James Franco and Mila Kunis, and Common and Jimmy Simpson, and then Mark Wahlberg.
James Franco.
I mean, it's not like MacGruber, is it?
No, I have not seen this movie yet, though. Not like that helps. I'm gonna fill in this dead air by.
I honestly have no idea.
The answer is Date Night.
I didn't see
Steve
it.
Steve Carell and Tina Fey. Yeah.
Oh, well, there's no way I could have got that without some kind of plot.
Well, that's the thing. I thought you saw it. And, like, you know, you remember Mark Wahlberg in the trailers of that.
No,
film.
I don't.
You know? Aw, they're sad. They missed the movie. Why? You see everybody.
Didn't see it.
Okay, next we got a new segment that we want to throw in here. If it's successful, maybe we'll do it every week. If not, maybe not. We love talking about good movies and praising them, so we're going to kind of flip the table and talk about bad movies in our new segment, The Dumb Movie of the Week.
Dumb Movie of the Week.
Now, we're not going to, per se, we don't have to pick a recent film, so we're going to talk about a film that Mike and I both really dislike, maybe even hate.
I hate it.
I know I do.
And that dumb movie of the week is Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes.
You want to say anything?
First of all, it sucks. This movie, if you haven't seen it, you are probably living a happier life. Stars, I don't even remember his name.
John Heder.
And, like, nobody else. And, no, isn't Billy Bob Thornton in this, or no?
Don't even ask me that question.
I can't remember. No. Anyway, it's about this character, Napoleon Dynamite, who lives with this messed up family in a messed up town, in a messed up school. And I mean messed up is like everybody's mean to him, and he's mentally challenged.
Right.
You know, maybe it's like Asperger's syndrome. I'm not sure the actual term of what he has is. And he goes to school and basically he tries to support Pedro, his friend, for running for president of the student council or whatever. And that's pretty much all that the plot in the movie.
You know, it's supposed to be a comedy. I didn't find myself laughing too many times during this film.
I think I laughed one time
right
for the scene where
Napoleon Dynamite or somebody throws a football and it hits somebody else in the head. That was the only time I laughed during the whole film.
I had lots of problems with this film. I didn't think any of the characters were likable. I did not like Napoleon Dynamite the most, and it's hard to like a movie when you just hate the main character.
Yeah,
they don't even try to make him likable in the entire film. I couldn't get on board with anything that he was doing. I didn't care if he was a social outcast. I didn't care if he was getting picked on by bullies. That being said, I didn't really think, like we just kind of discussed, there wasn't really a plot. We're just introduced with all these loser characters that kind of have an idea for Pedro to get in. And honestly, there was little to care about this film, so I really didn't bother with it.
The other thing is there's no really character development. You don't really get inside the mind of Napoleon Dynamite. Impossible. You know, and he makes this one, like, transformational decision, or you get the impression that it's transformational, when he decides to go out on stage and dance for popularity for his friend. But it just kind of seems arbitrary. You don't know why he's actually doing that. Except that, like, you would think that logically someone who had a heart would. But that doesn't make you like the person anymore.
Right.
In fact, I just felt embarrassed for him because his dancing was so awful. Although people claim it was amazing. He's a great dancer. His dance is copied in video games and stuff like that now.
You see, that's a problem I have with this movie. There's a lot of people who actually love this film.
But they can't tell me why. Every time I ask someone why they like this movie, they're just like, it was just funny. I'm like, what was funny about it? It was just hysterical.
Right.
That's not an answer to that question.
I think the creators of this film just tried to make
an anti-formulaic comedy.
Right.
You know, goes against the
norm, the formula.
And I get that. I think that's, kudos for giving it a shot. I think it failed, but kudos for trying, you know. I don't know. I thought the acting was bad, too. I mean, John Heder is not a good actor in my
opinion. No, he's not. So, did you like the film? Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. I didn't really like it that much.
Okay. If you said you would have liked it, we might have kicked you out of the room.
But just all the dialogue in the movie is so, like, you know, just slow and painful and not funny. And they make weird names up for things that people, like a ligra, I think it's like a lion,
tiger,
zebra or something
zebra.
Like that.
I don't even know, man. Like, it was painful to watch.
Very painful.
It's painful to talk about it now, so I just want to move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
But anyway, that is our dumb movie of the week.
Dumb movie of the week.
So what do we got next, Mike? Go ahead, plug it.
Flick Chart Battle. If you're not familiar with Flick Chart, first of all, it's www.flickchart.com. What this movie does is it compares two movies side by side, and we have to decide which one you like better. And it keeps track of them. It's an awesome website. I highly recommend it. And we are in no way given any kind of money or anything to plug this website. We are just fans.
We are fans. So our first matchup is Ferris Bueller's Day Off against The Terminal. Oh, man.
Well, it's interesting that The Terminal should be one of our first matchups. Because it is international Tom Hanks Day. If there was a way to make all of these Flick Chart things about Tom Hanks movies, we would do it.
That would be incredible.
But you can't do that kind
of
filter.
Nothing I know of.
All right, so I think I'm going to go with The Terminal here. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a classic. I love the movie. But I like The Terminal a lot better. Just because it was kind of fun. More fun to me. More
mature. I felt like Ferris Bueller's is just about rebellion and that teenage angst and that whole mid-80s scene with that. And I like the movie a lot. I think it's kind of a little bit overrated, though. So I'm also going
to
pick The Terminal.
I hate to say that, too. I think it's overrated.
I think it's overrated, yeah.
But, I hate to tell people that because then I just get...
I mean, it has a lot of, like, memorable sequences and, you know, lots of iconic characters.
But the movie also drags. I mean, it is an 80s movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of those movies, you know, they're different than the movies of today.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to kind of understand that going into an older movie like that, but...
Definitely. I mean, I still enjoy it, but, you know,
Terminal.
So we have The Incredible Hulk, the 2008 film, against Cloverfield.
Also 2008.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
That's interesting. I don't know. This is kind of tough for me because I liked both of these movies. You know, I liked The Incredible Hulk a lot. I also liked Cloverfield a lot. The things I hated about Cloverfield is I don't like the shaky cam through the whole film. But I really liked what Cloverfield tried to do, and it really did create this feeling of authenticity to it that I hadn't really seen since, like, The Blair Witch Project, and even then I didn't like The Blair Witch Project, so... I liked Cloverfield, but I think I'd have to go with The Incredible Hulk.
I'm going
to
pick Cloverfield because I think a lot of people don't like Cloverfield, but I actually enjoyed it a lot for what it was. It was kind of like a monster film, and we haven't had a good or, you know, a memorable monster film in a while. And like Sheen said, with the shaky camera and, like, what they tried to do with the film is just, like, bring to you this fear and this terror. And the characters, they had no idea what was going on. You're kind of just thrown right in with them, that you have no idea, there's just chaos in the streets, and you're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
Alright, there were things I didn't like about the movie,
right.
But at the same time, I still thought it was an effective horror or monster film, and that's what J.J. Abrams was trying to do, and I liked it in that aspect.
See, the thing about the movie is there's a bunch of things I didn't like about it.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue was horrible.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was horrible.
The dialogue was horrible, but the characters were just, you know, they were irreplaceable. I mean,
and even the acting was kind of subpar.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But still, despite all that, it was a good movie.
I liked it. So I think that is saying in itself how, like, you know, pretty unique or just, like, how it stood out because
yeah.
of it overcame all those bad obstacles. Oh, you're going to be our tiebreaker.
I mean, I like Cloverfield because it was like a monster movie. Like after the 2000 version of Godzilla in America, like destroying the name of Godzilla,
there wasn't like a monster film after that.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, I grew up reading comic books, and they always do something to me. And just for the fact that The Incredible Hulk is the first of the Marvel series that actually indicated the Avengers, I have to go with Incredible Hulk.
Well, the Iron Man did that, didn't they?
Not the first one, though.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll trust you.
Yeah, I'll trust you, too. We trust our producer. We have William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet in 1996 against Batman Forever in 1995.
I'm pretty sure Batman Forever was the worst of the Batman movies, if I remember correctly. Was it Batman Forever that's the worst one? Is that the one that Schwarzenegger's in? Do you have any idea?
I don't know.
All right. Romeo and Juliet. I really like this version of Romeo and Juliet. This is the version with Leonardo DiCaprio and John Leguizamo and I think his name is... I can't remember his name from Lost. Michael. Played Michael on the show. Harold Imperial.
So Mike's picking Romeo and Juliet. I'm going to pick Romeo and Juliet because we've discussed this on past episodes. I didn't really like any of the earlier Batman, so...
Yeah.
And, alright, Romeo and Juliet it is.
You should say it's Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet because that's what it is.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not, it's William Shakespeare's, you know? Alright, we have a very weird matchup here. We got Panic Room against the Royal Tenenbaums.
Royal Tenenbaums by a mile.
Panic Room was probably one of Fincher's hiccups.
It was so difficult to watch it.
I didn't think it was that bad, but you know, he wasn't up to par.
It was pretty boring.
Did you?
For a movie that was supposed to be very suspenseful, I just kind of, they're in a room. That's like
they're trying to get out.
I don't know. Like I just, it could have been more exciting.
That is true. Royal Tenenbaums is a hilarious.
I really like that movie.
So
it's definitely my favorite Wes Anderson film.
Ooh, this is interesting. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone against The Truman Show.
Not even a contest. The Truman Show.
Truman Show. I would have
blows it out of the water. One of my favorite Harry movies.
Casino Royale against The Matrix.
Matrix.
Yeah.
Matrix. It is.
No contest. We'll do two more.
Groundhog Day.
Oh man, just stop. Don't even read whatever.
I have
again.
To read it. They don't see it.
Groundhog. I know that. I'm just.
Groundhog Day against Van Helsing. It's going to be Groundhog Day.
Van Helsing sucked.
The Terminator against Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and that's the Johnny Depp one.
I actually liked the Johnny Depp version. I thought it was very funny. But the Terminator.
But it's gonna be Terminator.
Yeah.
All right.
One more.
Yeah, we need to talk. Ooh.
Oh, good thing I said one more.
We ended with the Tom Hanks thing. So we got Catch Me If You Can against The Sixth Sense, and Tom Hanks. We're gonna end it off with you. I don't know. Catch Me If You Can, like you said, is very, you know, fun, enjoyable movie. Leo and Hanks, but I mean, Sixth Sense was Shyamalan's best film.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the best horror films in like the past 50 years or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
You can constantly rewatch it and catch so many different things.
It has a very good rewatchable factor to it.
Yeah, I would go with The Sixth Sense.
Has to be Sixth Sense. Great film. Too bad.
Sorry, Hanks.
Alright. Well,
alright. That was Flick Shot Battle.
So, what is in conclusion right now is that we are done.
Yay!
We'll be back next week. I'm not sure what we're going to be talking about.
Movies.
We're going to be talking about movies. That's a good call, actually.
Three movies from Shein.
Yeah.
That's right. Everyone, write an email
that.
To Shein. And tell him to watch movies because he's been slacking the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
How have you not watched one movie in the past 2 weeks?
I watch a lot of movies.
Oh, like
but on Netflix, they're older. You know, they're kind of not. I watched this interesting movie called Weather Girl. I don't know what year it came out, but it was good.
It
had a good cast. John Cryer was actually in it.
Interesting.
Also, who else was in it? Mark Harmon, who is from NCIS. I didn't know he made movies, but yeah, he's in that movie. And also one of the people from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the girl.
Is this a recent film?
Yeah, it's pretty recent.
Okay,
it's a pretty recent film. Never heard of it before. Watched it on Netflix Insta-Watch. I really liked it. It was a very, very good comedy, but I've never heard of it before.
See? Mike's good throwing out a plug to Weather Girl. That's awesome.
Check it out. DV Dizzle.
Check it out.
That means DVD in Snoop Dogg terms.
Everyone have a good weekend. We'll be back next week.
Thanks, guys.
Goodbye.